KALW.
She ended up telling me, you know, I can't go on with this relationship because I can't stand leaving prison and not taking you with me when I leave these visits.
Today from the Uncuffed team, the challenges of finding and maintaining love behind bars.
And the most important part of his life towards the end, needing his only true-born son to be there with him, I wasn't there either.
In the intense heartbreak of losing someone you love while in prison.
So what I tried to do is I tried to arrange to speak at my dad's funeral over the phone. Well, that was horrible to me.
And an excerpt from San Francisco poet Jenny Chi.
All these places I have traveled without you, so I can forget how without you I am.
Love and loss. I'm Suni Khalid in for Hana Baba, and this is Cross Currents. The Public Media Journalist Association just announced their 2024 winners. We are thrilled to announce KALW won three of those awards. In honor of that, we bring you the first place winner from interview podcast Division B. It's Uncuffed's episode, Hole in the Heart. I'll let the producers take it from here.
Hey, what's going on, people? This is Uncuffed from the Solano side, and I'm BF Timms. I'm here with a few people for the round table. Who we got here?
This is Brian Mazza.
I'm Jay Evans, solid gold on the mic like the Oscar Academy Awards.
Hey, check me out. This Anthony Stick Talk Ivy. You already know who it is.
Well, actually, we don't know who you are. You're kind of new to the program, both Jay and Ivy.
Well, I'm the rookie of the year, man. You know, I just started this Uncuffed thing, you know, digging it. You know, I'm loving it. I'm with my boys in here, and we finna do our thing.
So today, we're gonna talk about a few things, maybe a couple heavy things, love being one of them. You know, and I was just wondering, have any of you, any of us, ever thought about or had or experienced, quote unquote, the one that got away?
Yeah, it happened to me with Desiree Goree. So if I was to consider the one that got away, it would definitely have to be her.
All right, well, I guess I got to speak on that too. And the reality is, no, I'm always the one that got away. Yeah, facts.
That checks out.
Yeah, I don't know about the one that got away, but I would say the one that came back into my life. I would say my wife, Vivian Ivy, we met when we was kids, you know, brief. But she came back in my life after like 7-8 years of me being in prison. And she'll be happily married right now.
Congratulations on that one, Pope.
Appreciate that.
It's amazing the strength that women have coming and seeing us in prison. You know, it just takes so much heart and so much strength to come inside here and to see us. And you just got to tip your hats off to them.
I would more call it strength, because what a lot of people out there in society don't know is not only are these prisons a long ways from most residential areas, they have to drive a long ways, stand in a visiting line sometimes for hours.
Yeah, it's a logistic nightmare coming up into these prisons to come visit sometimes. There's obstacles everywhere. It takes a lot of perseverance.
Yeah, so... And the reason why I asked you guys that question is because our new guy, the Golden Child, Anthony Ivy, he did an interview, a really moving interview with someone who had his own version of the one that got away, but with a twist.
Yeah, I just want to say shout out to Rodney Hines for doing this. But doing a story with me. But it was crazy how it came about. I remember one time I was coming up to the media center and we were just sitting waiting. And he said, "Hey, man, you do podcasts?" I said, "Yeah." He like, "You know what? Can I tell you this story?" And he started breaking the story down. But as he was telling me it, right, I can see the emotions in his eyes and in his voice and hear it in his voice. And I'm like, yeah, that's one we got to revisit. And I think that this story was my best story.
Well, let's give everybody else a chance to appreciate this story. Let's hear it.
My name was Shanae Browning. I called her Cakes. When I first made eye contact with her, I was like, wow, she kind of different. I was feeling her off the dribble. You feel me? Like, even right now, I hear her voice in my head. You know what I'm saying? Like, she got a voice that's real unique. She was Chinese black, had that long jet black curly hair.
So what was the reason, like, you never hollered at her?
For one, I was a few years younger than her. And I'm from the concrete. So I seen her as a higher skill.
Tell me, like, over the years, what kept y'all apart?
So I'm going to just say life. I don't think we was able to really have a moment.
So what was that moment when y'all did have time?
I had just paroled from prison. So I popped up on my mom's at church. I'm sitting down, and you know how prison make you. I'm super observant about everybody who up in the church.
Looking.
Just looking. And I happened to catch her in my peripheral, starts around, and it's her.
Like, ooh.
You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I'm still on some old penitentiary stuff, you feel me? So I ride a kite right there.
You did not ride a kite.
I gave it to the usher and was like, can you blast after her right there? And I see like a big old Kool-Aid smell. So we get outside and, you know, we embrace.
And what happened after that?
What happened after that?
You got her number now. She got your number. Yeah,
bingo, lit, right? She happened to call. She said, can I meet up with you when I get off work? I'm like, it's good. I met her right there on Florida and Franklin. It was an old Rite Aid in that parking lot. I never gonna forget. You know how they say your first impression is his last? So I timed it perfect. As soon as she hopped out, I hit play on this particular song, that Avant and Kiki Wyatt. Nothing in this world I wouldn't do for you. So as soon as she stepped out, I turned it up loud and go, bam. I see them high heels, them fishnet stockings. Oh my God, you know how we be out them walks.
But surely.
Yeah, so put her arms around my neck and squeezed me, hugged me, and I'm like, ooh, okay, here we go. And later on that night, she called again. She was like, I just want to know, can I come get a kiss before I go to bed? I'm like this, you know what I mean? You only get certain opportunities once in a lifetime. You know what I'm saying? I hop in the court and blast directly to her. I do about 100 over here trying to get there. I'm like, oh my God, is this really happening? So it's like I'm in the middle of saying something. Next thing I know, her lips is on mine, her tongue in my mouth. I don't see number fireworks. You know what I'm saying? And bright lights. You know what I mean? This kiss was passionate. Sensual. It was like from there, she put a stamp on my heart forever. Maybe a day or two after that, I ended up going on my way to prison.
I'm like, damn, after the kiss, you went to prison. How long did it take for you to like get back in touch?
I get a letter in the mail, and I'm like, what the hell? I'm thinking I'm tripping. So I open up the letter. Lo and behold, it's from Shanae. I was surprised. I'm like, hold on, man. I'm locked up and she locked up. Nah, that's gonna work.
I can't really imagine, like, you know, I'm talking to her and she in the same situation as me. Could you read that first letter that she wrote you?
She said, I'm just really trying to work on my relationship
with God so he can make me into the woman that he has called. I've been into many other relationships that have failed, and when everyone left,
he remained with me. If I was presented the opportunity to be with her, I would never left her.
I'm like, dang, she must have really was thinking about you to really like take the initiative to do that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You got people on the streets that don't even contact your own family. So for her to do that, I knew it was something deep.
Her letters was uplifting and encouraging. We started off as friends first. And as time progressed, our feelings, our love, and our respect, it grew more and more for each other. And I know that my letters meant something to her.
You know, in prison, dudes, they don't be passing their letters, and they don't show their feelings about that female.
Right.
You know how we get down in here, you know?
Right.
It's kind of like a vulnerable thing, but
absolutely.
For you to do that, that's a real man right there.
She wrote me this letter back in January 2015. She say, greetings and invisible kisses and thoughts
right back at you. I just received your letter, and as always, it brought a smile to my face and thoughts to my head. I look forward to your letters. I haven't been feeling good. Back and forth to the hospital. It's been taking a toll on me. They found a hole in my heart and they said, when my heart is stressed, the blood and oxygen is not getting into my muscles. But then he says, well, even though I have a clogged artery, I don't function like I do because I can take a shower on my own and fix my bed. So it's not on top of his to-do list to do anything. They say I can't run or do anything to stress my heart out. Thank God.
But thank God, my life is in his hands and not theirs.
Man, that's deep. How did that hit you when you got that letter, bro?
Like a mountain fell on me, man, because, you know, that's one of the worst things, man, especially with us being in prison, is for somebody close to us to have some type of condition that could affect their life or possibly take their life, you know what I'm saying, and you not be able to be there with them. So it hurt. It hurt deep.
She got out. What kind of relationship did y'all have?
She immediately put money on the phone. She stayed writing, sent me bundles of pictures, and the way we engaged with each other was as if we had like our own little thing. It was like special.
And it wasn't matched.
This was the only time that, you know, me and her kind of made a left hand turn, and this kind of hurt me too. It hurt me bad. Man, one morning, I meet up with one of my partners, and you know, this dude, you know, he was one of them wanna be Mr. Big Shot type dude, you know what I mean? He like, hey, Sab, he like, yeah, man, you remember your girl Cakes? He like, yeah, man, I knocked her on Facebook.
When you said knocking, what do you mean by knocking?
Like,
for people that don't know.
As if he got her. So, without letting him see me sweat, you know, I kept my poker face on. I'm like, is that right? And when I got back to my cell, I wrote her a letter. And I don't feel good about the things that I said to her at all. To this day, it comes back and it haunts me and it hurts me that I said such terrible things to such a beautiful person who didn't deserve that. She cried so bad, she told my mom about it, and my mom got at me, was like, told me how wrong I was for things I was said. It was a while before me and her even communicated again. You know, she was a very forgiving woman. She's like, you've been knowing me since we was kids. I would never disrespect you like that. And it made me reflect back. I was like, damn, you know, this dude, he always had been a snake. He got a reputation for doing this kind of stuff. So once she told me that, and she allowed me back into her life, and you know, our communication, we was back on. You know what I mean? She was always on me about bettering myself. It's like, not savage, but I knew she cared and she loved Rodney. But I was on the phone one night with my mom. I'm like, mom, hold on. So I click over and it's Cakes. She said, what's you doing, baby? Let me finish this up with my mom and I'ma holler right back at you. Finish my conversation with my mom. I dial her numbers. Phone is ringing. No answer. I call her again. Just ringing. You know, next morning I wake up and I call my mom, man. She tell me, like, Rodney, Shanae died. And like when she said that, it was like everything like froze for a minute. And I just replayed back everything from last night. And I remember, like, before I told her that I was gonna call her back, she told me, she said, baby, make sure you call me back, 'cause I gotta tell you something. So at that moment, I'm like, damn, like everything, it just crumbled at that very instant. And that moment, I felt alive, but I felt dead. What was that she was gonna tell me? What is she gonna talk to me about? And when they found her, and when they picked up her phone, my number was the last number in her phone. My voice was last voice that she heard. It's always gonna haunt me forever, man. Just to know what she wanted to talk about. It's like living without a limb. You know what I'm saying? It hurt, bro, straight up. It put me in a mind state of just taking life for granted. I hold myself responsible for the fact that she eventually had told me that when she had got that letter from me, it motivated her to get her own place. So when she had the heart attack, if she'd have been at home with her parents, maybe she'll be here now. So now I'm sorry for every negative and bad thing that I said to you when I wrote that letter. I love you more than love itself. I miss you. I look at you every day. You know, I got you on my wall. And more than that, I got you in my heart. Oh yeah, I almost forgot too. I got a tattoo of an angel. It says, Shanae Browning.
Wow. That conversation between our own Anthony Ivey and Rodney Hines was so deep, heavy. Brian, I'm looking at you. It looks like you have something on your mind about this.
You know, that really affected me deeply because I had a similar experience in my life. I was blessed. You know, Ivy, listening to this piece made me think a lot about a past relationship I had with Tara Wythe. I met this beautiful girl on the streets at a party, and I asked her to dance, and I didn't even know how to dance myself. She was so beautiful, and I was willing to put myself out there. And, you know, we fell in love, and I ended up going to prison, and she came down to Pleasant Valley State Penitentiary and married me in a level 3 penitentiary visiting room, which showed great heart. And it was, you know, she committed herself to me and married me in prison. And I ended up being with her for a couple of years. I had like eight and a half years to do, a long time. And the love endured. But one thing happened, you know, she came to see me many times and family visiting and whatnot, which was a great experience, you know, emotionally for both of us. She ended up telling me, you know, I can't go on with this relationship because I can't stand leaving prison and not taking you with me when I leave these visits. And I understood totally. And she wanted children. So it was kind of one of those situations where I had to let her go and we divorced. I was up in Calaveras Yard in Jamestown to go into fire camp. And, you know, we divorced. And she dropped out of my life for like 20 years. So she moved on. And she met somebody, moved to Texas, and she had twins, a Wolf and Moxie, beautiful little babies, you know, something that she always wanted out of life, you know. And that relationship ran its course, and she ended up moving back to California. This is 20 years later. This is like last year, I think. She contacts my mom and says, hey, what's going on with Brian? And we got back in touch. And, it was really wonderful to talk to her and to make that connection again after so many years. It was like we picked up right where we left off. And we were thinking about, you know, visiting again, getting back together. And she got sick. And, you know, it turned out to be a diagnosis of liver cancer, and it took her really fast. You know, listening to this story really hit home to me because of the way that, you know, love's transcended the penitentiary and the span of years and all the obstacles that life puts in front of us, and, you know, and how sometimes it doesn't always turn out the way we want it to.
Thank you, Maza, for telling us that story. That was deep. And I just appreciate you wanting to be on this roundtable. You weren't even scheduled to be on this roundtable, but you did your thing, man, and I appreciate you.
You know, listening to that story, it sounded pretty clear to me that Rodney somehow blamed himself. He had some harsh and mean things, according to him, to say to her when he thought that she was involved with somebody else. So I know how that can make him feel guilty. It just felt like he was blaming himself, like he felt responsible for, you know, her passing alone like that, and then him not making the connection.
I sensed a lot of regret and sadness in it, not being able to get on the phone and talk to her and understand that he might have been the last person to try to call her. It's just, man, that took me on one right there.
Yeah, I think, I know I didn't went through similar situations when I blamed people and then thought back later, like, I probably shouldn't have did that. You know, I was working off emotions. You know, we in prison, we say we don't, but, you know, we do, especially when it comes to women. And you just in the cell thinking, and you don't have that outlet in here to be able to just talk to people about your feelings like that. It's luckily if you do have a friend that you can express that to, but that could be a sign of weakness. So for him to be going through that in prison, I know it was deep. And I still can hear it in his voice to today when he still bring her up. He has something to do with, you know, her passing.
You know, one thing in this story that was actually funny, in a story that wasn't meant to be funny, is when he showed how institutionalized he was. When he sat in church and passed a kite to the usher, a kite being a note. He actually wrote a note and he gave that note to the usher and he called it a kite, you know, and that whole thing was funny to me. Were there other things that, like you, Brian, and Jay, other things that like stood out to you the way the kite did, you know, for me?
What stood out for me was all the tactics that he used to get her attention, besides the moment of writing the kite, writing the note, is playing the certain music, making sure that he has all these mannerisms and other characteristics that he knew would get her attention. It's like, yeah, I understood him right there because I didn't use those type of tactics in the past. Pulling up, playing SWV or something like that and knowing for a fact that's going to get the attention of whoever is around.
I saw you nodding your head, Ivy, when he mentioned tactics. Why'd you do that?
You know, when he was telling me the story, it's like when I was there when he was telling me the story. I was right there with him. I can visualize what he was doing when he had the music bumping, when she pulled up, when he bounced out, you know what I'm saying? So I was just I'm just glad that he like remembered like that, and he was a good talker.
That award-winning episode of the Uncuffed podcast first aired in November. It was made by the crew at Solano State Prison, B.F. Timms, Brian Maza, Anthony Ivey, and Jay Evans. There is a longer version you can listen to at kalw.org/uncuffed. As we heard, people handle grief in many different ways. Some turn to poetry. Here is San Francisco poet Jenny Chi reading an excerpt from her piece, Postcards from the Living.
Remember world history class, how I translated lectures to you each night, partly to practice, partly to keep you with me. Every day, there's so much new I want to show you. Like the spongy tang of injera,
pork belly banh mi melting like butter on the tongue. All these places I have traveled without you, so I can forget how without you I am. Remember when I was 10 and hateful, trying too hard to be cool. How in a rare moment you said all you wanted was for me to love my life, my only life, this life you started. Here, look how the clouds blush so fiercely, the stark blue winter so cold and bright.
That was San Francisco poet Jenny Chi reading an excerpt from her poem, Postcards from the Living, as part of our series, Bay Poets. You can find more work from the series at kalw.org/baypoets. Today's team includes Hussein Khan, Michaela Sia, Christopher Alam, James Rollins, Ganadi Joe Johnson, Victor Tentz, Shireen Adel, Lisa Morehouse, Angela Johnston, Marissa Ortega Welch, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Suni Khalid.